And we're holding on Mem Aleph, Mud Aleph, the fourth line. We were learning yesterday about a machlokas amiroyim on the question of whether a person can aser something that belongs to somebody else. So we started by saying that Rav Huna had said that if Reuven finds Shimon's animal sitting lying on the ground in front of Avodah Zarah and shechts it, and even he starts only shechting one simon, and already the animal will be also b'hana as zivchei meisim, as tekrevis Avodah Zarah. It doesn't belong to him, but once he did a maisa, we said even a small maisa, such as beginning to cut a simon, that already he's able to aser it. Then we said that there were three other amiroyim who disagreed with Rav Huna on that, Rav Nachman, Rav Amram, and Rav Yitzchak. They said, in the most of the shaloy, a person cannot aser something that doesn't belong to him. It doesn't matter even if they did a maisa in it, such as shechting it. We talked about a braisa. We talked about in both parts of the Gemara, both in analyzing Rav Huna's opinion and in analyzing the opinions of the three Amoraim. We brought a point about when a person takes a chatas and shechts it outside the azara, l'shem of a azara, that he's chayv three chatas, and we were discussing how exactly that works out, how exactly according to Rav Huna, how would it be possible that by the time he reaches the point of being chayav for shkorte foot, it wouldn't already be possible and meaningless, and then the shkita would be meaningless, because it's already a korban for avodah zarah. And according to the three amiroyim, the question is kind of the other way around. Why are we saying that din applied dafka to a bird? Why don't we say that it applies equally well to an animal? And we gave an answer for that, because after all, since a chatas is not really his, but on the other hand, he gets a kapara from it, you might think it's considered his, and therefore the point is it's not considered his, and he can't answer it. Only by a bird, where you have that possibility of doing a tiny little bit of shchita and making it also, only then is that kind of thing relevant. So the Gemara continues, Toshma, let's bring another proof. In our Mishnah, we said Shnayim Uksin Vasakin. If two people are holding a knife, the Shoichtin, and they're both shechting together, like we said in the Mishnah, one of them is holding the handle of the knife and the other one is holding the blade. Echad Bashum Echad Mikol Elu. Now one of them has in mind any of the things mentioned in the Mishnah, he's shechting in honor of a mountain or a hill or the whole list of things that the Mishnah had brought, or any of the ones that the Gemara had brought as well in a Braisa, for example, in the name of Michal or in the name of a tiny worm, etc. So then we said, and the other one has in mind something that's kosher, then the shchita is possible, because one of the ones who was participating in the shchita had a thought that would pass the law, that would make it, if not outright zivchei meisim. We learned yesterday it wouldn't necessarily be osa b'hana because of this thing. Because as we talked about, those natural features in and of themselves are not able to become a avodah zarah, or because of different other reasons that we learned about yesterday, why it wouldn't be also b'hana, but nevertheless it would be a possible shchita. And we're saying that there were two people doing that, and they both participate in it, then one of them is able to make it shchita possible. Now, we assume that we're talking about that the one who had the possible thought doesn't have any ownership of the animal. So according to Rav Huna, we can understand, doesn't matter whether he has ownership or not, but according to the three Amoraim, why should he answer it if he doesn't own the animal? And the answer is, they would say that the Mishnah is in fact talking about where he does have a partnership, he does have a part ownership of the animal, and therefore he is indeed able to answer it. But Rav Nachman and Rav Amram and Rav Yitzchak would say that in fact, if he didn't own anything in the animal, then in fact him shechting it and having in mind the shame of a desire wouldn't be a problem, because it's only the owner of the animal that would be able to do such a thing, that would be able to make it also. Tosfos in fact points out, by the way, that you see from this that when Rav Huna says that it's osur, doesn't just mean it's osur to bring as a korban. We see over here that it's osur for regular use as well, because this case that we're talking about in the Mishnah was not talking about shechting for a korban, it's shechting for regular food. So the Gemara continues, Toshma, let's bring another proof. A Mishnah in Gittin discusses. Now you have, like, if a person causes a hezek to somebody else, a financial damage or loss, then of course he has to pay. And in general, that's true whether it was b'shoygig or b'meizig. We have the expression, the Gemara says, in Bava Kama, adam mu'ad la'olam, a person is always mu'ad, so even if, so you don't say, like with animals, there's tam, there's mu'ad, so there's no difference whether shoygig, oynes, etc., you're always chayiv to pay. However, the Mishnah and the Gemara there in Gittin point out there's a certain kind of hezek that's called hezek she'enim nikker. It's not physically noticeable or detectable. Namely, we're not talking about a physical hezek. We're talking about a ruchnistic hezek. For example, food that was supposed to be kept tamei, such as truma, and now that was supposed to be kept tahor, such as truma, and now was made tamei. So physically, chemically, there's no difference between it. There's no difference in it whether it's tamei or tahor. But halachically, there's a big difference. Truma tahora, a kohen can eat. Truma tamei, there's nothing you can do with it except brook. So the Mishnah discusses over there these cases of hezek she'en nikker. So the Mishnah says, if somebody makes tamei food of somebody else's that was supposed to say tahor, for example, over the taharis of his truma or kodshim, or he mixes truma in with the chulin of somebody else. Now, what happens is, if you have, when truma gets mixed in with chulin, if you have 100 times as much truma, if you have 100 times as much chulin as truma, then fine, the truma is bottle. And then what you do is, in most cases, you take out one measure to give to the kohenim because you don't want to deprive them of the amount they were supposed to get. But gezel ha-shevet. But then you can eat the rest. You don't worry about the fact that inevitably some of what you're eating was truma before because it's bottle. But if it's less than that, then it's called meduma, and the whole thing is also to zorim to eat. What you wind up having to do is you sell it to kohenim minus the value of the actual saw or whatever, the actual measure of truma that fell in, but it's always going to be at a cheap. So for example, let's say you had 90 saw of cholin and one saw of truma fell into it, it's not going to be bottle. You now have a mixture of 91, you're going to have to sell it to kohenim as if it was 90. You give them the one for free and you're selling them 90, but even that 90, you're losing out because you end up having to sell it to them at a lower value, at a cheaper price. People will buy truma for less than they will chulin because they can't resell it. They have to eat it patara. It's easy for it to become tamei, etc. So the person who owned that chulin has now suffered a loss. But again, it's not something physically visible. There's nothing that you can point to chemically or biologically or physically or anything and say truma is different than chulin. It's a spiritual difference. So if somebody did that, he mixed truma into somebody else's chulin, b'hamenaseh, or he does menaseh, and now menaseh literally means to pour a libation for Avodah Zarah. In that Gemara in Gittin, there's in fact a machloekas between Chizki and Rabbi Yochanan. Do we mean that he actually did nisuch, that he actually took the wine and poured it for Avodah Zarah? Or actually, Rashi explains over there in that Gemara in Gittin that it doesn't mean actually he poured it, because then if he poured it out, it would go on the ground or whatever. Of course, it's wasted. Sure, you'd have to pay for that. We're talking about like he took his hand and swished it around in the water. It's called Meshachlech. In Hebrew, he swished around his hand in the water, in the wine, having in mind that he's doing that for Avodah Zarah. Well, that makes it also b'hanah. That's one explanation, and that's actually not Rabbi Yochanan and Chizki, it's actually Rav and Shmuel. Argue. Rav says it means that shishtet, and Shmuel says that it means that he mixed in yayin nesach into the other guy's wine. So our Gemara over here, then Tosfos points out, we're not really dealing with according to Shmuel's opinion, because yeah, if he mixed in actual wine, then for sure the Gemara is going to ask over here. The point is, we're going to ask that on the face of it, Einonim Oseh Davar Sheinu, that we see that Einonim Oseh Davar Sheinu Shaloi, according to these three Amoraim. So how are they going to explain that Mishnah? If you're talking about where he actually physically mixed in Yain Nesem, look, I mean, you know, it's no different than, for example, if I have a pot of meat cooking on the stove and you go and pour milk in, there's no question it makes it also as bus to follow, even though ain't on a moist drug shame for life, we have something physical of Isru that's in birth. Therefore our Gemara would primarily be talking about a point of Rav. That we're talking about, he only did this shichruch. He stood around, he switched around his hand in the wine, and thereby, but again, that's only a spiritual difference because physically there's no difference in the wine before and after that. So in any case, so those kinds of things, the Mishnah says, b'shergig potter. If the person did it b'shergig, so for example, he didn't know that, he didn't know it was the other guy's wine, he didn't know that it's truma, he didn't know it would become osir, etc. So then, potter, he will be potter from the payment. Now again, had it been a regular hezek, he'd be higher whether shergig or mazik, because other more loyal ones. But when it comes to over here, hezek, ken, and nicker, then we say, it's a, we say, loy shmei hezek, it's not considered a hezek in halacha. There's actually, that's where they have the machlokas of Chizkiya and Rabbi Yochanan, whether hezek, ken, and nicker, shmei hezek or not, Rabbi Yochanan holds, and this is the halacha, that such a hezek is not considered a full-fledged hezek in halacha, so therefore, if he doesn't raise it, as we're going to say, he has to pay, but if he doesn't show you the we don't make him pay, unlike a regular run-of-the-mill hezek. Now, you have the opinion of Chizki over there in the Gemara and Gittin, so he's going to have to understand this whole case differently. But in any case, we're talking over here according to Rabbi Yechimah, and this is the halacha, that hezek shein and nikar is lo shmei hezek, it's not considered, so therefore, b'shergig, he'll be potter from paying, b'mezid chayev, but if he wouldn't b'mezid, then he's going to be chayev because, then he's going to be chayev because then the chachamim penalize him and make him pay for it. Now, Rashi points out, what about when he's doing manasseh? Anyway, so the point of the question is, before we get into that side point, but the point of the question is that we're talking about that Reuben is doing this to Shimon's thing. So, Einonim Oisid Rav Hashem Nishaloi. He can't ask her somebody else's thing. So then in that case, so why in these places should it even be considered a hezek? Why indeed should we say, in particular as far as the Nisuch, that it should make it Oser? Mela fine. But the other thing is again, with Matame, the fact is, Truma actually touched it objectively. With Manasseh, fine. With Madamea, fine. Truma was objectively mixed into it. But with Manasseh, the real question is, Manasseh, if we say again, like Rav's opinion over there, that it means Meshachshech, that he just stirs his hand around in the wine and has in mind the Shema Vadazara, there's no physical change to it. According to the three Amoraim, why should that wine now be also Einon Amos to Dravashay Nishaloi? Now, Rashi brings up a side point over here. Why isn't the guy potter in the case of Manasseh? Because Kamle Bidirabamine. He's doing something that makes him chayav nisik. He's doing a libation. He's stirring the wine. L'shem avodah zarah. So, we have the usual rule that a person is potter in that case. And Rashi points out, you can't even say that there was no hasra over here, because the fact is, this din of kom le'bidirabamine applies even if the person is not actually going to be chayav nisa. For example, he did it for shoygig. So the answer is, Rashi says no, because the Gemara explains there in Gittin, as soon as he picks it up, then already he becomes chayav to pay it. By picking it up, as we touched on yesterday, he's koine to a certain extent. So at that point, he's chayav to pay for it. Now, when does he actually become chayav nisa? Only when he does the actual nisuch, the actual pouring, or in this case, the actual shichruch, the actual stirring his hand around in it. So therefore, it doesn't apply to such a thing where he was chayav in the payment before that. In any case, so again, the question is, how is he able to make that wine osir with his nisuch, with his shichruch, with his stirring around the hand in there, if the wine doesn't belong? I mean, if there's no phenomenon, just the shukras bagabe, he also will have to answer that it means that he has a partnership, that he has a part ownership of the wine, and therefore he would be able to answer it. It's true, had he not owned it at all, then the three Amiroyim over here would say that he can't answer it, it's not his, and ain't on him, oisid rubber, sha'ina shaloi. So the Gemara points out Ketanot. You know what? This whole thing, the machlokas between Rav Huna on one side and Rav Nachman, Rav Amram, and Rav Yitzchak on the other side, Ketanot is actually a machlokas tanoim, whether a person can ask for something that doesn't belong to him or not. Because we learn in a Braisa. If a goy does nisuch of wine of a Jew, and again we're talking about nisuch, that he does shichruch, that he stirs around, he moves around his hand in it, having in mind that he's moving around the wine, l'shem of Adazara, shaloi b'fnei avodas chachamim, and he's doing it even not right in front of a getchke. If he's doing it right in front of a getchke, you could say that for sure it's nisuch, but if it's someplace else, you might argue that's not really. Nevertheless, osir, he makes an osir b'hanah, because einonim oisid dravashe, because odim oisid dravashe in a shaloi. So the Tanakama of that braisa holds like Rav Huna, that one person is able to ask for somebody else's thing. Now, the Gemara does explain in Avodah Zarah, right? The Gemara does explain in Avodah Zarah that what he could do is, Even though it's also bahana, the one thing is that he could do is sell it for this really goy who did the shichuch and at least get his money back that way. Because then basically, in other words, the idea is yayin nesach is also bahana, but here it's not so much that he's getting hana from the yayin nesach, here it's more that he's getting back what the guy himself caused him damage. So that's fine. So we can do that, but other than that, it's also bahana. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, Matirin, Oisai, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava say it is mutter. Some Rashi over there in Avodah Zarah learns that it's mutter bahana, but it would be also to drink, though, because the goy touched it. The Ravid brings that, that maybe even these kanoim would hold you allowed to drink it in a case like that, because mipnei shnei dvarim, they say there's two considerations. Echad shein menashkin yayin ela b'fnei avodas chachamim. First of all, they do nisuch only when they're in front of a geshta. So now, when it comes to, well, now, Tosfos points out earlier, when it comes to shoychit, we don't find such a thing. A person shechs a korban for Avodah Zarah, doesn't matter whether he's in front of the Avodah Zarah or not, which is why earlier, which is why when we learned yesterday about a person shechs l'shem harim, l'shem voice, etc., we didn't make that distinction because attacker doesn't matter over there. But here, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder and Yehuda ben Bava hold that when it comes to nisuch, when it comes to shichuch, at least a person is going to do that with shem avodah zarah only if he's actually in front of the avodah zarah. So that's one reason. And the echad and another reason they say sheyochal loy maloy that the yid can tell the goy loy kolheim nach to eser yeni loinsim. You don't have the ability to make my wine osir against my will. You touched my wine, but fine. Eidon Abos, Adav Hashem Shaloi, you have no ability to make my wine osir by touching him. So now the Tanakama is saying you can sell it to that particular goy. But let's say, for example, that particular goy refuses to buy him, and you don't have the ability to force him. Let's say, like we talked about yesterday or the day before, that the guy is an alam, he's a tough guy, and you're not going to be able to deal with him. Well, then you have no choice but to suffer the loss. As opposed to, if you would have been Beseder and if you would have been Bava, I was saying that you would be allowed to sell it to any goy you want. Because again, Einonim Osedavar, Shein Ishalah. Tosfos brings up a point that the Gemara there in Avodah Zarah seems to say that even these Tanoim seem to say that you could only sell it to that goy. But that's the point. So that's the point. It's not that these Tanoim hold that. They hold you could sell it to any goy. The Tanakama will sell it to see if we'll say you can sell it to that goy. In any case, so the point is, we seem to have a machlokas tanoim, whether a person can ask for something that doesn't belong to him. According to the Tanakama, yes. According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder and Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, no. But the Gemara says, Rav Nachman, Rav Amr, Rav Yitzchok Amri. Now, what are Rav Nachman, Rav Amr, and Rav Yitzchok going to say to that? It comes out, according to that they're holding like a das yachid. They're holding like those two tanoim, but that all the other chachamim oppose them. They're going to answer you that no, what we're saying is can even work according to the Tanakhama over there. Now, there's no question what Rav Huna is saying definitely can't go according to them. Rav Huna is definitely going to have to go according to the Tanakhama because they're making it clear that Einonim Oysa Dravah Shreinah Shaloi, that Einonim Oysa Dravah Shreinah Shaloi was Rav Huna holds that he put it. But the three Amiroim, they can say, we also hold like the Chachamim, because Afil Lamandama Oydim Oysa Dravah Shreinah Shaloi, even the Tanakhama of that Braisa, that says that a person could ask for something that's not his, and therefore the goy is able to make the yid's wine also by doing shikshuk in it, but they would say hanimili kusi. That applies only to a goy. The word kusi is one of those things where the censors change. The original Gemara would have said something like goy or nohri or something like that. In a lot of places, the censors didn't like such terms, and they changed them to kusi as if to imply that it doesn't apply to contemporary goyim, only for the fusin that was brought into Eretz Yisrael by some creative. But in fact, the correct word over here is goy or nohri or whatever. In any case, when you're talking about a goy, then you can say that he would be able to that the Tanakhama would say that he's able to ask for something that's not his. But say the three Amiroyim, Abu Yisrael, but if Yisrael is doing it, well, Sa'uri Kamachavan, we can assume he doesn't really believe in Avodah Zarah or want to worship it or anything. He's only doing it. He's just doing it in order to make the guy, or in order to harass the other guy. He's pretending like he's doing, like he's pretending like he's doing it, like he's doing it the shame of his honor, so that the other guy is going to feel bad, oy vey, my wine is now awesome. But he really has no intention of doing the shame of his honor, and that's the reason why it wouldn't be awesome. So then the three Amoroyim would say, in our case over here, the subject of our sugya, when they shechted somebody else's animal, the shame of his honor, we can assume they didn't really mean the shame of his honor. They're just doing it, they're only doing it in order to harass him. So therefore, if they have a shutfus, if they have a partnership in it, then fine. We can say that's also, like we said before. But if they don't have a partnership in it, then unlike the goy who sincerely, maybe the goyim don't sincerely 100% believe in Avodah Zarah either, but at least, I mean, it's part of their daily life as opposed to for Jews. Therefore, the goy has more of an ability to answer it by doing shichshuch in it, whereas a Jew does not. Rashi points out these three Amoroyim themselves had said before, we had in the couple of previous cases where we said the case would be that he has a shutfus in it. Here also, they could have given the same answer as well. But now that we have this distinction between a goyim and yid, so now we can say that's really the distinction. We don't really need to say anymore that the yid has a shutfus in it. We could say that if there's a difference between a goy and a yid who's just doing it to cause fire to the other guy. Tosfos points out, actually, you could say that even if he does have shutfus, here you could say l'sa'urikamachavim, and he actually meant just to be mitzayir him. In other words, it's one thing when it comes to shechting the animal, for example. Shechting an animal is a big deal, so you could argue if he has a shutfus, and he's saying that he's shechting l'shem of adara, then we kind of have to take him at his word. But over here, even if he has a shutfus in the wine, if he's just mishachshaking it and saying that he's doing it l'shem of adara, then these three amoroyim are going to say, not necessarily does that make it osir, and we can say just l'sa'urikamachavim. And they would say, even the Tanakhama might agree with that, and therefore their opinion might even work according to the Tanakhama's opinion. With that said, the Ra'ah explains that no. And in the end, these three Amoroyim do say that it's true, but they would say it doesn't matter whether he's intending to harass them or not. They would say that the Tanakhama is holding. They would understand this Braisa to be saying that the Tanakhama is saying when he's only planning to with Sarah only to harass him, then in fact it does not become awesome. So the Gemara says Toshma. Well, let's go back to our Mishnah again. Shnayim osin b'sakim v'shechtin. We had two people holding a knife and shechting. Echad b'shum echad mitol elu v'echad b'shum davar kofer. One of them has in mind something that would make the shchita possible. He has in mind the shem horim, etc. The echol b'shum davar kosher, and the other one is having in mind something kosher, namely nothing that would possible it. You could say just doing a plain shchita. You said shchita sepsula. Then the shchita is possible, showing that even by the yid, because here we're talking about two Jews, and we don't say that he's only meaning with sarai, that he's only coming to harass her. So we see that we don't apply that kind of thing. So the Gemara answers, "Hachmaskin b'Yisrael Mumer." No, because our Mishnah is talking about that one of those Jews is a Yisrael Mumer. He's already Shmadzich Rachman al-Aslan, and he is regularly worshiping Avodah Zarah. So therefore, so in that case, we can't say Lasara anymore. Here we have to say that he really does sincerely mean it, just as much as a goy would. Now Tosfos does point out earlier in the Masechta, which we touched on the last couple of days, that this is the first time he's doing it, so he's not yet a mumer. Had he done this regularly before, then anyway, he'd be a mumer, and anyway, his shchita would be possible even if he doesn't have anything in mind. So again, according to Rashi, we're starting to say over here that we want to bring up this point of Lutsara, and therefore we can now revisit those previous cases that we brought up and say it doesn't even report that another way of explaining would be there could be shutfus, or another possibility there could be tsar, whereas according to Tosfos, we're saying that no. Now the Gemara is saying, even if he does have shutfus, you could still say Lutsa'urikamachavan. However, you cannot do that in the case of Yisro Mumma, because then you have no reason to think he's just doing it Lutsa'urai. Then it's more likely that he's actually doing it because he really believes, because he's really doing it the shame of a Dezara, because he's already Yisro Mumma. Okay, Toshma, let's prove from what we said before. On the time of Amadamea of Amanasach, somebody makes somebody else's food, his Taras Tomei, or he mixes in Trimmer with his Cholin, or he pours his wine for Avodah Zarah. And again, we said before, there's two possibilities. It can mean, actually, it can mean Meshachshech, or it can mean mixing in Yai Nesach with it. Beshogig potter b'mezin chayim. So he said if he does a beshogig, then he's potter from mezing, from paying. If he does a b'mezin, he's chayim. So we see that he is able to answer something that's not his. We don't say the sa'uri kamachavin. And the answer is hachanami. But yisur mumer, he also would have to answer that we're talking about yisur mumer. Now here we can't say that we're talking about a goy, because then you can't talk about chayiv and potter. How are you going to force the goy to pay? So therefore, necessity we have to be talking about yisur mumer. So points out the Beis Yosef. So that would be the answer. And again, so whether he has a partnership in it or not, yisur mumer already, we can't say l'tzuri kamachaven. We have to take it at his word that he actually did it l'shem of Arizona, and therefore he's going to ask for the wine. And the only thing is, if he did it b'shogeg, then we'll patter him from pain. Now here Tosfos points out, well, again, when we had the two explanations before, what menasif means, whether it means touching it and doing shichshuf in it, or whether it means pouring an actual yain nesach into it and mixing it, here we could say that the answer could be that, not so much that, but rather menasif, another possibility it brings over there, is that he touches it, he doesn't even have to do shichshuf, b'shem of Arizona, so here that answer would work as well that he just touches it. So the Gemara says, "Omelet of Acha Brei Rov Lo Ravash." Now, so you're telling me then, you're telling me with a regular yid, if he's doing, for example, according to the three Amiroyim, if he shechts the Shem of Adizara, then we're saying he doesn't really mean the Shem of Adizara. He's just doing the Seuri Kamachav, and he's just doing it to harass the other guy, and therefore he wouldn't answer it on the grounds that the three Amiroyim are saying that he doesn't have the ability to answer it. So, Rav Acha Brei de Rav Ashi, what happens if he's through boy? What if they actually did Hasra? So this guy's about to shech somebody else's animal, saying that he's doing it l'shem of Avodah Zarah. So we're saying maybe he doesn't sincerely mean it, maybe he's just doing it in order to harass the guy and give him sa'ar. But what if they give him Hasra, the kibbul all of Hasra, and he actually accepted the Hasra, as is necessary for him to be chayiv misa? He actually has to say to them, I know this is chayiv misa, but I'm doing it anyway. What would be the din? Would we say then that, so we just said that there's a distinction between a yisro mumer and a regular yid? Would we draw that distinction over here as well and say therefore that as, and then say that he still just means for tsa'uri to harass him, or would we say that now he sincerely means for avodah zarah? Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers in Hitzur Atzma the Mitzvah Kamer. You're talking about where he actually gave himself over to be killed in principle. Once he shechts this animal, and once he actually accomplishes what he set out to do, then the Edom can actually, on the basis of that Hasra, bring him to Beis Din and have him executed. Ein l'chom mumer b'dor mizeh. There's no greater example of mumer than that. And then definitely we would have to say that he actually meant it sincerely, and that the animal is actually also as Zivchei Mason, and here we wouldn't say Einon Rosa Dabar Shein Shaloi anymore, because here there's no question that he meant it in order to be Mitzayer. So in the end, though, the fact is, we did bring up in the Gemara over here this matter of whether he has a shutfus or not. So in the end, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings like this: a yid shecht somebody else's animal for Avodah Zarah. He doesn't answer it because we can be sure that he meant only with Sara, just in order to harass him. If he has a part ownership in it, yesh oimrim, some say that he would ask for not only his part, but also the part that belongs to the other guy. Yesh oimrim, that even in that, all he means is to cause tsar to his partner and not to answer it. Meaning, when the Gemara had talked before about shutfus, and now it starts talking about l'tzuri, is the Gemara implying that it's one or the other? So either he has a shutfus, is it that if he has a shutfus, then we don't say l'tzuri, but if he doesn't have a shutfus, then we say l'tzuri, or do we say either way l'tzuri, and therefore be mutter? Those are the two different opinions in Shulchan Aruch. And then the Ramah adds that if they, as he just said in the Gemara over here, if they gave him Asra, and he did, then for sure he's also just like any other mumer. Then for sure he would ask for the animal just like any other. Okay. Having talked about things that you can't shech l'shem various types of Avodah Zarah, so now let's talk about things that a person is not allowed to do in terms of shechita, where it looks like he's doing l'shem Avodah Zarah. So the Mishnah says, "Ein shechtin lo b'seich yamim." You're not allowed to shecht into a body of water, the sea, or a lake, or whatever. Lo b'seich naharos, or into a river. or into a container. In the first two, with the sea or the river, people might think that it's going to look like he's shechting it to the malach of the sea or the river. And as we learned before, if he did that, it would be zifchenes, it would be osabana. So therefore, he shouldn't do it. He shouldn't even just shecht right over the lake or the river. As far as into a keli, the problem is that it looks like he's receiving in a keli in order to sprinkle it or do something with it for avodah zarah. Another point is also some of the Foshim point out, it's not just that he might be doing it, sprinkle it, l'shem avodah zarah, there's also that the goyim would have a minhag, the goyim and the minim, as we're going to talk about, would have a minhag, like they would gather the blood together in a container or in a pit in the ground or something, and then eat near it. The Torah tells us, lois sosu ala dom, you're not allowed to eat on the blood. There's a variety of different meanings of that pasuk. The Gemara in Sanhedrin brings half a dozen different things that we learn from that pasuk, but in the most simple sense, it means the goyim would often do that. They would shecht an animal, whether the same of a desaro, just plain shlita, and then they would kill it, whatever, and then they would collect the blood in some kind of container or pit or something and eat near there in order to attract their gods or their shadim or whatever to come join them in the meal or whatever exactly the reason was. So you can't do that. You can't shecht into a keli and collect the blood in a keli. What you could do is you could shech into a pit of water, into a pit that has water in it. Rashi brings two different views. So it's ugo or oigil. Ugo would mean a round pit. So you have a pit in the ground and you have water in there already. There it doesn't look like you're collecting the blood for avodah zarah or for any of these rituals or something, because then it wouldn't be easy. Then you wouldn't mix it with water. The reef brings a gilsa, we'll say oigen shomayim. That oigen would be a keli. So we just said you can't shecht into a keli, but again, if there's water in the keli, then it would be mutter. Oigen means like a basin. So then you are allowed to do that. The Mishnah continues, because then it doesn't look like you're shechting to the, then it doesn't look like you're collecting the blood, the shame of a desire. Ubisina, what about if a person is on a boat? Al gabe kalim, then he is allowed to shecht on kalim. So what kind of kalim are we talking about? Rashi describes that you have a kalim that where you put one end of it on the deck of the boat and the other end sticking out into the water so that the blood dribbles out into the water. You don't want to get the boat dirty. So that won't look like you're shechting into the sea. So therefore that's fine. That's fine, because there it's obvious you're doing it in order to keep the boat clean. Another point as well, the Ran points out anyway, it's also because you're not actually doing it directly into the sea. You're doing it on the side of the boat, and it dribbles into the sea. So that kind of thing you're allowed to do. The Mishnah continues, in shechtin leguma, you're not allowed to shecht into a kol acre. In shechtin leguma kol acre, you're not allowed to shecht into a hole in the ground at all. Because again, that was the kind of thing they would do for avodah zarah, either to sprinkle it or to eat by the blood and attract shadim or whatever. Tosfos says that maybe we're only talking about over here a clean pit, where there again it looks like he might be receiving the blood, collecting the blood for avodah zarah. But then Tosfos says that doesn't really work with the continuation of the Gemara, so therefore Tosfos says better to be careful not to shecht into any kind of pit, even if it's not clean, because there's still this concern that he's collecting it for avodah zarah purposes. Avol, but the Mishnah continues, Osik Buma Vesech Vesei, but a person can make a hole in the ground inside his house, Bishvosh Yikonis Adam Vesech, because the blood will collect in that. Now, the Gemara is going to ask, what do you mean? You just said you can't make a pit. Now we're saying in your house you could. But there also, we'll see in the Gemara. Over Shukla Yasakain. However, in the marketplace, in the street, he should not do such a thing. Shulay Yachakas Aminim, in order not to follow the Shulay Yachakas at Tzedukim. It says over here in the printed Gemara at Tzedukim, it's really, this is another census change, it's really Minim. So you shouldn't imitate the Choik, the word Yachakas, which is related to the word Choik. So you shouldn't strengthen and imitate the Chukos of the Minim. So they do this kind of thing. Like we said, they shecht into a pit and they use the blood for avodah zarah purposes. So now, if you do this kind of thing in the street, then it's going to look like you're following in their ways. Tosfos brings up the point. We have the famous idea that when something is also because of maris ayin, it's always also, even if you're in private. So why should it be any different? So Tosfos explains, because as the Gemara is going to say, when he does it in his house, everybody realizes that he's just doing it to keep his house clean. As opposed to, for example, a case in the Masechta Shabbos, where, for example, a person's clothes got wet on Shabbos, so that a Mishnah says there that he's allowed to spread them out to dry, but not in front of people, so they don't think he washed them on Shabbos. And the Gemara explains it's not so. He can't even spread it out in private. The fact is, if they see him spreading it out, wherever they see him, they're going to think he washed it on Shabbos. As opposed to over here, Tosfos says, they see him making a hole in the ground in his house and then shefting, they're going to realize he's doing it because he wants to keep his floor clean. And Tosfos goes on to say that, in fact, there seems to be a machlokes between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi on that, whether in fact we do say that, but when something is also, when something is also, is it also in private, or are there different possibilities? So the Gemara says, let's start with the Mishnah said, "Ain shechtin lo l'sarif pola." We said you can't shecht into the sea or into a river or whatever, but we said you could shecht into a pit with water in it. So the question is, "Ma'ishna l'sarif yamin deloy." So what's the difference? You're telling me you can't shecht into the sea, "Da'amin l'sarif the yamach hashochet," because people are going to think that he's shechting to the malach of the sea. And that's no good. That would be zivchemixim. We'll say ugashamayim nami. So what, how is it any better if he shechts into a pit full of water? Amu the baboya kashachet. People are going to say that he's shechting in honor of his own reflection. That's visible in the water. In fact, a medrash brings that in the time of Gideon, where people were oved avodah zarah until Gideon got them to do tshuva and led them in a successful war against Midian. So the Yalkut Shemoni, in fact, says that people were worshipping their own images. So over here, if he does it over a container of water, don't you have the same problem? And the answer is Amar Rava Bachurim Shona, because Rava says what we're talking about over here is the water is dirty or cloudy. So therefore, you don't have a reflection of it. So when it comes to a sea or a river or whatever, you don't have that consideration. The fact is, there's always a concern that people are going to think that he's shechting in honor of the Sar Shoyam or whatever. But when it comes to a small container like that, where the only concern is his only reflection, fine, in dirty water, there's no reflection. We said in shechtin l'gumma v'chula. We said you're not allowed to shecht into a pit, but you're allowed to make a pit in your house, but you're not allowed to do that in the marketplace. So the Gemara says, "Well, I'm in shechtin l'gumma klal." You just said that you can't shecht into a pit at all. Why are we now saying that there's an exception and you could in your house? And the answer is Amar Abaye, Reisha b'gumma shebashuk, because the Reisha is talking about when the pit is in the marketplace. So then, in other words, the Mishnah is telling you don't shecht in a pit in the marketplace. You could in your house, but in the marketplace, let's go back to, don't do that. Why? Because then it's going to look like you're following in the ways of the tzedukim. Omale Rava, but Rava says, does that really work? The fact is, the sefer of the Mishnah continues, however, in the marketplace, you should not do that. So that sounds like Mitzal, the Reisha Labba Shukka Skinnin. That sounds like the Reisha is not talking about in the marketplace, in the street at all. It seems to be talking about generically that you can't shecht into a hole in the ground. The beginning of the Mishnah says in shechtin l'gumma kol ikur, you can't shecht into a pit at all, which implies not at all. But fine, if you mean kol ikur, it means, in other words, even for example, if there's dirt in it. Now let's say, for example, again, Tosfos had pointed out that maybe you could shecht into a dirty pit, but then Tosfos says that maybe not. But okay, so you could say kol ikur includes that kind of thing. Maybe it doesn't necessarily mean that, but still. My question would be, the question would be then, so how do we deal with the seeming contradiction in the Mishnah, whether you are allowed to shecht into a pit or whether not? So it doesn't work to say that there's a difference between the marketplace and the house, because the way the Mishnah phrases it, for Shukla Yasekein, sounds like it's telling us a new thing that we didn't have before. Ela Omar Rava, Hachikama, Rabbi Rava says this is how it is. In shechtin l'gumma kol ikur, you're not allowed to shecht into a pit at all. That means even in the house, because again, it looks like he's following the minim who collect the blood in a pit in order to attract shaving or whatever. However, if a person wants to keep his chotzer clean and he wants to shecht over there, Kaitan, who also, what can he do? Oysa mokim chutz l'gumma. He can prepare a place outside of the pit, the shechet, and that would be where he shecht. The dam shoses the yerid l'gumma, and then the blood will dribble down into the pit. So in other words, what he'll do is he'll designate a place of a foot or two away from the pit. He will then dig the pit over there. He'll dig a channel going towards the pit, and then he'll shecht at the beginning of that channel, and the blood will run down the channel into the pit, and that way his whole chotzer doesn't become dirty with blood. That kind of thing is obvious. He's doing that obviously in order to keep his chotzer clean. So therefore, that's fine. Over shukla yaseh kein, but in the marketplace, you should not do even that. Shalei yachakes a minim, because then he would be following in the chukim of the minim, because in the shuk, nobody in the marketplace, nobody cares, nobody bothers to keep it clean. So therefore, that kind of thing is a distinction. So again, in other words, as Tosfos points out, when a person is doing it in the privacy of his house or his chotzer, it's very obvious that there's no minim involved. He's just doing it to keep the chotzer clean. But in the Rosh Hashanah and in the Shul, nobody does that, and therefore, why would he be doing such a thing in Rosh Hashanah? So now it starts to be the concern that maybe he's doing Shalei Chak as a minim. And again, Tosfos had pointed out, and Tosfos also elsewhere, and Avodah Zarah points out, that maybe in fact the halacha is not that something that's also if it was a maris ayin is also even in private, indeed based on our Mishnah, which distinguishes and says that there are things that he could do in private, but not in public. Okay, so that would be how Rava explains the meaning. So in other words, in short, even in your house, even in your chotzer, you're not allowed to shech directly into a pit. In your house, in your chotzer, you can shech near the pit and dig a channel that the blood should go in there. But in the shuk, you can't do that at all. Okay. The Gemara says, Tanya Chavasei Rava. We learn in Braisa like the way Rava explains our mission. If a person is traveling on a boat, and he doesn't have any place to shech on the boat without getting the deck all dirty, then he can stick out his hand outside of the boat and shecht, and the blood will dribble down the side of the boat and then from there into the water. And again, that's not a problem, because then it's obvious that he's doing it in order to keep the boat clean. And by the same token, when we said that he does Al-Gabi Kalim in the Mishnah, we said that he does it on top of Kalim, is the same idea. In other words, he has a Kalim where one end of it is on the boat and the other end is sticking out over the water, and that's fine. So there are different mephoshim about details within that. Maybe in fact, maybe even when you say al-gabe kelim, maybe it actually means he has to do it like on the outside of the keli rather than the inside. On the inside, you'd have a problem, as we said, unless there's water in the keli, because then it looks like he's collecting the blood for other desired purposes. So maybe over here we'd be talking about that he actually has to do it on the outside of the keli. In any case, the Braisa continues. So that part has nothing to do with what Rava said. We're bringing the complete Braisa. The Braisa continues. This is the part that's relevant to what Rava said. The ain't shirk of the guma collector. You're not allowed to shift into a pit anymore. So what does somebody do? He wants to keep his pots clean. He can prepare an area for shechting outside of the pit, the shechet, and that would be where he shechet. The dam shows the urine of the guma, and the blood will dribble down through the channel that he digs and go into the pit. Or a shukla, yasa kain, but in the marketplace, we should not do that. Mishum shenemu, the same way, say lechel, because the Torah tells us, don't go in their statutes, don't go in their superstitions, in their practices and things. So this would be following in their practices, because again, they collect the blood in a pit like that. And before we discuss, are we talking about that it would actually be osur min ha-Torah to do it? If so, if it's osur min ha-Torah, then it wouldn't be allowed inside the house either. When it comes to the same, you don't have a difference whether it's in private or in public. So Tiferes Yaakov explains that no, when he does that kind of thing, it's not actually the same way, so therefore it's really only maris ayin. And the Chachamim can distinguish when it comes to maris ayin between inside and out, between in your house versus in the street. And in fact, the Braisa continues, the name also came, if a person does do that, and he shechts into a pit, sort of b'dika achlam, we have to check in after him, because he might really be a min, and then if he is, we're not going to be able to eat his bread or drink his wine. So in other words, exactly that. If he does that, we have concern. Maybe after all, he is a min, and then he's checking to him thoroughly. Now the Rashba does bring up a point though in that case, and the Mishnah should have said that if he shechts into these things, he tells him psula, then he should have said that his shchita is possible. So he says, no, the shchita is possible. The shchita is kosher. We're not going to take him out of cheskas kashrus unless we check in and find that he was a min. In other words, there are two ways of looking at this. Does it mean by default I assume that he's no good unless we check in here and find that he's innocent? Or is it the other way around? Is he innocent until proven guilty only if the investigation finds that in fact he's a min? Then we start asking his things, but not before that. So the Rambam seems to take it the first way, but he says you're also to eat from his shitta until you check and find that he's not a min, as opposed to the Rashba is saying that and it comes out that the Rambam would agree with the Rambam in that as well. On the other hand, the Rashba learns the other way around. He still has a ches for sanctus, but if we check in and find that he's a min, then in fact we will be also to eat from his shitta and from his bread and wine and anything. So we see, though, the Braisa says, exactly like Rava, that's what the Mishnah means. You're not allowed to shech them directly into a pit at all, but if you want to shech near a pit and have the blood flow down into the pit, you're allowed to in your house, but you're not allowed to in the shech. Now, the Mishnah continues, now that we've talked about shechtim, l'shem avodah zarah, or things that look like avodah zarah, now let's talk about other things that a person might have in mind during the shechita that might cosplay. So the Mishnah says, a shechit l'shem olah, if a person takes, now this is, we're talking about over here, we're talking about an animal of chulin, not an animal of kodshim. If it's kodshim and he shechts him outside the besmikdash, he's got other problems, though the animal is not only going to be osabanah, he's going to be chayiv kodesh. But here we're talking about a plain chulin animal, but he says that he's shechting it, having in mind that it's an oila. So he never actually designated it as an oila, but he's saying now that he's shechting it as if it was an oila. L'shem zvachin, or he's shechting and having in mind that it's a shlomi. L'shem Asham Tolui, or he's having in mind that it is an Asham Tolui. Now, all of these, as we're going to explain, all of these are things that a person can bring voluntarily. An Olo, a Shlomim, a person can bring the Nedir and a Dava. So therefore, Rashi explains, anybody who sees him doing that is going to say, so what did he do? Right now, he just now was Mastership, and then he's Shechting it, and they're going to think that you're allowed to Shecht Kodshim outside the Bessin. That's what, of course, you're not. So therefore, the Chacham declared it possible. So the same thing, and actually, so that's as far as an Ola and a Shlomim. And Oshem Tolui. Now we know what an Oshem Tolui is. Rashi spells it out for us over here. That we'll learn about it more in the Sefer Chrislos next year, best of them. But basically, where a person has in front of him two things, one of which he'd be high of Taurus for doing or eating, and the other one not. And he ate one of them, and he doesn't know which one it was. So examples are two pieces of fat in front of him, one chaylev and one not. He ate one, he doesn't know which one. He has a wife and a sister with a house in him, and he doesn't know which one he had relations with. So he brings an Oshem Tolui, and that protects him from Yisurim until he actually finds out. If he ever finds out he actually did the Aveira, then he's going to bring a Chatos. Now, it's one thing Rashi points out, and the Gemara is going to take this up, with an Olo or Shlomim, sure, a person might mistakenly think that this person right on the spot over here designated an Olo or Shlomim, because an Olo or Shlomim you can bring voluntarily, but an Oshem Tolui you can't bring voluntarily, only in a case like that. So why would anybody see him shechting it, saying it's an Oshem Tolui, think that you're allowed to eat Torchim Bachot? So we'll take that up in the Gemara. So the Shem Pesach, if he says that he's shechting it as a korban pesach, the shem toida, or as a korban, or the korban toida. In all those cases, shchita is possible because all of those korbanas can come to neder and adava, except where the Oshem Tolui we'll see about in the Gemara. So again, if anybody sees him doing that, they're going to think that you're allowed to shet podshim outside the bismillah. Now, fact is, he wasn't actually makdashit, so therefore it won't be also bahamna, as the Besyosa points out. It will be also to eat the same. He brings actually the tour may imply that it is actually also bahamna as well, because maybe we really do have to be choshes that he really was makdashit on his time. Reb Shimon is makdashit because he doesn't worry about this modest eye. He's not concerned about this modest iron. Tosfos says that no. What does that mean? Reb Shimon does not hold a modest iron. No, what it is that Tosfos refers to a Gemara at the end of Menachos, that talks about if a person says, I obligate to bring myself to bring an oila, al menas, on condition that I can bring it in Beis Chonya. Beis Chonya, the Gemara had explained over there, was a temple in Alexandria in Egypt, which Chonya, son of Shimon HaTzadik, had built illegally. The second Mishnah was already standing, but he built it's a long story over there in the Gemara, how he was supposed to be Kohen Gadol and didn't end up becoming, and ended up plotting against his brother and having to run away. It's a whole story in the Gemara over there. And the upshot is he built this fake Beis HaMikdash in Alexandria in Egypt. So now we have a mission over there that describes if the person says, I obligate myself to bring an Ola on condition that I can bring it in Beis Chonya. So Rav Shimon says, so the Tanakhama says, well, no, you can't do that. He has to offer it in the Beis HaMikdash. It's a full-fledged Ola, and an Ola has to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Shimon says that no, it's not even considered an Ola, because that's not considered a normal neder. So in the same vein over here, Rav Shimon would say that just because the person is saying, I'm shechting this animal, the shame oila, or the shame whatever these other korbanas, doesn't mean that it actually has any of the din of a korban, and therefore there's no concern that we should ask, says Rav Shimon. Continues the Mishnah. So in other words, even if he was makdish, it wouldn't be chal because he's planning to bring it outside the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore it wouldn't be considered a hekdash at all, and therefore there's nothing to worry about the marasayim, says Rav Shimon. The Mishnah continues, Shnayim osen basak and mishukhin. If two people are holding a knife and shechting together, echad l'shum gavur kosher, one of them has in mind that it's one of these types of korbanos, and the other one holds that knot, and the other one is thinking that knot, shechitas l'psula, and the shechita is possible, because again, one of them is able to pass the shechita. Subject to the machlokas that we had in the Gemara before, we're talking about, is this always the case, or would it only be where he has a shutfus in it? Here, I guess the point of l'tza'uri from a chavin may not be relevant, maybe not. Whether he says that we can think that maybe he's doing it just in order to harass the guy, maybe that would be relevant or maybe not. In any case, the point is that but again, according to Rav Huna, he's going to ask for it regardless. Whether he owns it or not, because Adam Oysa Drava Shein Shaloi, according to the three Amudoyim, not necessarily. So in Shulchan Aruch it brings again that the difference is whether he has shutfus. If not, then Eidonim Oysa Drava Shein Shaloi, because only Latsari. However, then the Ramah brings Yesh Oysim. Some say that's also in any case because Maris Ayim, and he says Yesh Lahach. So it would come out that just to be on the safe side, we would say that if one of them has in mind the Shem Ola or any of these other Korbanos that we're mentioning over here, he would in fact ask the Rik whether he has a shutfus in Eidonim. The Mishnah continues though, Hashof of the Shem Chatas, but if he shechts having in mind that it is a Chatas, and he wasn't actually Chai of a Chatas. Lashem Oshem Vadai, we have in mind for an Oshem Vadai, which is for various Sultan Averis, Rasham Zelus, Rasham Meilus, etc., that are listed in Terapezo Machlevan. Lashem Bechor, we shechts it saying that it's a Bechor, when in fact it's not. Lashem Meiser, or he says that's Meiser Behema, when it's a Bechor, not. Lashem Tmura, we says that it's a Tmura, that it was an exchange that he did. For a different animal or carbon, in all those cases the shchita is kosher because nobody's going to think that he's makdish them right now because these things are not things that can become beneder in a dava. These are not korbanos that a person can bring voluntarily. So therefore, it's obvious that the guy is some lying and half of China. So there's not going to be any concern of maris ayin in the as we're going to discuss in the Gemara. Any of these things, if he did one of these things, it would be well known that he did something that makes him chayav a chasas, or that he has a bechor, or etc. So therefore, it's not a problem. Zat. Also, the Mishnah says, here's the general rule. Hold davar shen nidav and nidav, anything that can be brought from neder and a davar. So if he shechts having in mind that type of korban, then it'll be also on the side. It says we have posel. If it's not nidav and nidav, asher the shemay kosher. Then if he shechts it having in mind for that, then it's kosher. For example, the chatas and the osham vada and the rest of them that the Mishnah had listed. Okay. So the Gemara says, we said in the Mishnah, asher the same oila, that if he shechts it for having in mind that it's an oila and a number of other korbanos, and one of them was an osham tadri. So you want to ask Oshem Tali by Nidav and Nidav, who? How can an Oshem Tali, you can't bring it to Neder and a Dava. We said before, the case that you have to bring it to Oshem Tali is that you have two things in front of you, one Osir, one Mutter, etc. Fine, there was a different opinion in Masechta Knesset. Anna says you don't need the two things. It's enough that he has one piece of it in chaylev in front of him, and he has one piece in front of him. He doesn't know if it's chaylev or not. Whatever. The point is though that it has to be that he did some aveda that would have been chayav chatas if he for sure did it, and now he brings an oshem tzadik. And the answer is Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hamani Rabbi Elazar. The answer is our Mishnah would be appointed Rabbi Elazar. He says nisnabim onim oshem tzadik before yom. A person is in fact able to voluntarily bring an otam tolerate every single day. Because he holds that every day a person could say that maybe I did an aveda and maybe I should have to bring a korban. The Gemara explains there in Krisis, it can't be an obligation, because if he finds out that he did the Avera and brings a Chatas, then he wouldn't be able to bring this Oshin Toluri. But the point is that he can actually bring it in a Dabba, he can bring an Oshin Toluri voluntarily anytime he wants, because Rashi explains, in other words, when there were Edim that it's a suffix whether he did the Aveda or not, so then in effect, a non sadi we can be Edim that every day he has a suffix of whether he did an Aveda. So he says that an Oshem Tali can be brought voluntarily on that basis, and therefore it's considered Nidav and Nidav. So now anybody who sees him, Shef, and saying what's in Oshem Tali is going to think that maybe in fact he is voluntarily bringing an Oshem Tali. The Gemara asks Pesach by Nidav and Nidav. What about a Korban Pesach? You can't voluntarily bring it. Zimna Kliyama, it has a fixed time for it, Erev Pesach. And the answer is Amar Rav Oshi, a shiny Pesach over the Shosek Falashana Kula. Yes, but a Pesach is different because even though there's a particular time when you have to bring it, you could designate it any time during the year. And the fact is, if you bring it any other time during the year, as we learned many times in Masechta Zevachim, it automatically becomes a shlamim. So therefore, some people are still going to think that he's eating kodesh from bechutz. So they're going to say, fine, on the spot here, he designated it as a Pesach, but now he's shechting it. So therefore, he's turning it into a shlamim. And a shlamim is something that can be brought for neder and a double. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yana Lashono El Tzmimim. All of this that we're talking about in the Mishnah is only when the animal is a Tumim. So it is capable of being brought as a carbon, and he's claiming that it is. Av Bali Mumin, but says Rav Yana, if the animal was a Bal Mum, maybe a deer, then it'll be very obvious. He can't bring a Bal Mum as a carbon, so therefore it'll be quite obvious that he's not doing it as a carbon, that he wasn't makdish it on the spot. But Rav Yechonon Amar for the Bali Mumin Mami, Rav Yechonon says, even if the animal is a Bal Mum, Zimnin did Romile Midia Mumin, Zimnin did Romile Midia Mum of Lo Yadir. Sometimes there might be something covering the Mum where it's not so visible. There might be hair or wool or whatever covering it. So therefore, dirty and dirt could be dirt. And then people are going to think that at the time they're not going to realize that it's a Bal Mum. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Asher for the Shem Chatzas, we said if he shechted having in mind that it's a Chatzas or various other obligatory korbanos, then we said it doesn't matter because nobody's going to think, for example, that he designated it as a Chatzas on the spot because he can't bring a Chatzas for neder and a dover. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan lo shonu, ela she'enim mechoyev Chatzas. Now that would only apply if the guy is not, in fact, chayev a Chatzas. So, and he can't bring a Chatzas for neder and a dover. So therefore, there's no concern that people are going to think that he's chayev a Chatzas. Rashi adds that even if you're going to say that people are going to think he is chayav chatas, no, because there's a coil for it. Rashi explains an interesting psychological thing. If a person did an aveda b'shoigig, and by definition he's bringing a chatas only if it was b'shoigig, then Rashi says he's not going to try to cover it up. On the contrary, he's going to maybe not announce it publicly, but he's not going to try to hide it. It's going to be known that he actually did it because he wanted. He knows that embarrassment is part of the process of his kapara. In fact, there's an interesting thing on this. I think from the Foizim Lublin that points out, he was talking to a person and discussing this very point with him. A person did an aveda b'shoigig. Why is it he brings a korban and that's all? That's all he needs is a korban and he's misaper. And the Chorze explains, I think it was the Chorze anyway, explains that actually it was a whole long process. The guy has to go to his Rav and tell him, and the Rav, of course, has what to tell him, has words to tell him about what he did wrong, that he should realize and feel bad about it, and then gives him instructions what he needs to do next. And the guy goes to the animal dealer to buy the animal, and he goes to the Koyanim and so on and so forth, and each time, each time. They're pointing out to him what he did wrong and making him feel bad about it so that eventually he does tshuva. So it's not just that he's bringing the korban, there's also a fair amount of embarrassment in it, and then all of that embarrassment ends up helping being part of his kapara, ends up being part of his kapara as well. So therefore, if he did an aveda b'shoigig, then we would in fact know about it. So if we don't know about it, then we have every reason to say that in fact he didn't do any such aveda, and therefore people are not going to think that he in fact did anything wrong that would make him chayav a chatas. So Rabbi Akiva Eger actually refers over here to a Magen Avraham in Shulchan Aruch that seems to discuss this point about when a person would and wouldn't want to confess his averus publicly. And in fact, there is a certain distinction in that regard whether in fact it's an averus that's known to the public or not. I wasn't able to find that Magen Avraham about that distinction. In any case, so again, Amar Rabbi Yechon, Amar Shana, Elasha, and Mechuyiv Chatas. So this would only apply if the guy is in fact not Chayiv Chatas. Avam Mechuyiv Chatas, but if he is in fact Chayiv Chatas, and people know about it, Ema, then we have to say, people who see him now Shechting, having in mind for a Chatas, or Shum Chatas, who always said that now he's doing it for his Chatas, and in fact that he just was Makdash it and Shechted it for his Chatas, and therefore it's going to be possible the same as the other Korbanos. Now again, here you have the machlokas. Would it be also to eat, or would it be also bahana, or would it just be also to eat? So the Gemara asks why. Why he didn't say I'm bringing it from my chatas? Well, he says, for example, by an oila, he says with shame oila, fine. A person is not required to bring an oila, so it means the same oila for the sake of an oila that I just decided right now. But when it comes to chatosi, he shouldn't have to say with shame chatosi. So then it doesn't mean that he's doing it for his chatas. So the answer is Amar Abahu, but Omer Lashem Chatos. In fact, the Mishnah is talking about where he says, I'm saying it, I'm doing it for my chatas. And again, he's actually Chayav Chatos in here. So fine, if he's not Chayav Chatos, then it means he's just lying. But if he was in fact Chayav Chatos, and he's saying I'm in the chatosi, then it will be also. So that's between the Bach on the one side and the Taz on the other. What about if he says, Harezu Lichatosi, or what about if he says, Harezu Chatosi? Tosfos also points out that if he doesn't say the Shem Chatos, or even if he said, Harezu Chatosi, then it wouldn't mean anything. But then you have Achronim, the Bach and the Taz and the Shach argue about that. What if he does say Harezu Chatosi? Is it true that Lo Yamakbom, or would it in fact be something significant as well? So that's why he says the Shem Chatosi. Doesn't just say the Shem Chatos, he says the Shem Chatosi. We said the Shem Tzmura. We said that if he shechted, having in mind that it's a Tzmura, then we would say it's kosher, because again, you can't just make a Tzmura, because in order to make a Tzmura, you have to have an animal of kosher. So similarly, Omer Rav Elazar, Lashana, Alachain, Loizabach, Beset Basin. This would only apply if he doesn't have another korban in his house, so now he has nothing to make a Tzmura with, so therefore, obviously, he's having a Shem. And again, Rashi points out that if he had a korban in his house, then again, there would be a coil for it. People would know about it. So Tosfos points out there's a reason a person would want to inform people that he has a korban in his house so people don't accidentally do me'ila with it. Like this, people may not realize that it's an animal designated for a korban. They might work with it, they might shear it, they might whatever, so therefore you have to inform people. Aval, but Rabbi Elazar says, Yeshle Zevach says basically, if he does have a korban in his house, Ema Amuri Amode, then we would say that maybe indeed he made a tzmura, and therefore we would say, and therefore we're back to the problem of Marasahim. Again, the question is, again, though, in the Mishnah, he's just saying the Shem Tzmura. He's not saying for the sake of a Tzmura of my korban. So why would we think that in fact it is a Tzmura? And the fact is, by the way, Rashi points out, it is possible to make a Tzmura even when the animals are not together. A person can have an animal of Kodshim at home and say someplace else, I'm making a Tzmura, and it would work. But the question is, he didn't say Tzmura Zivchi. So again, Omer Rav Abahu Bo Imlo Shem Tzmura Zivchi. In fact, we are talking about in the Mishnah where he actually said it's for the Tzmura of my Korban. So now, Rashi points out that no, if he does do that, even if he doesn't have a korban. So now the point is, if he doesn't have a korban, though, it's still kosher. He actually said b'shem tumuras zivchi for the sake of the tumura of my korban. So maybe people are going to think he actually has a korban at home when in fact he doesn't. No, because again, like you said, if he has a korban, there will in fact be a kurl. People will know about it. We finished off in the Mishnah Zahakwal. The Mishnah had said this is the general rule. Anything that's nigger than nigger, anything that can be brought as a voluntary korban, and if he chefs having in mind that, it'll be possible. Anything that can't be brought as a voluntary korban, then it'll be kosher regardless. So the Mishnah says Zahakwal is suing, right? What is that Zahakwal coming to include? So the answer is Lasir Oilas Nozir. It comes to include the oil of a nozir. So he said that I'm doing l'shem oilas nazirusi. So then that can come in neder and adava because people are going to think that maybe he was a nazir. People are going to think that maybe he was a nazir, and now he's bringing this korban for him. The ma'ud etema. Otherwise, he would have thought all in neder. The fact is, he didn't make a neder of nazirus. So therefore, maybe it shouldn't be a problem. No, ema neder b'tzina. People might think that maybe he made a neder of nazirus in private. Person doesn't necessarily publicize the fact that he's a nazir, but people didn't realize. Okay, a nazir has to not cut his hair, etc. But fine, the fact that a person doesn't cut his hair for 3 days is not necessarily going to be so noticeable. And the same thing with the other things. So therefore, people might indeed think that he was a nazir, and therefore that's reason enough to ask for this animal. What about when the Mishnah said she'ain a nidiv and nidiv lasuyim, right? When it says that something that can't be brought voluntarily, then there's no problem if he says that he's checked in the machine. So lasuyim oy lasuyavetis. That comes to include if he says that I'm bringing it as the oyla of a woman who gave birth. Now his wife did not in fact give birth, so therefore it's not a problem. But however, that would only apply if he has no wife at all. But obviously then he wouldn't be able to bring an oy lasuyavetis. Now Rashi points out that if he doesn't have a wife, then of course he can't bring an Olas Yeledes. So what even would be the chiddush over here? So Rashi has a different gusa over here. We'll talk about that in a second. So if he hasn't, but the gusa we have in front of us in the Gemara is if he has no wife. Then obviously he's not bringing an Olas Yeledes. Aber yesh lo isha, but if he has a wife, Eimel Shmo Hoisa, then you could say maybe he's doing it for her sake. So again, the Gemara says, V'holik Pamela Shem Olas Ishi, but he didn't say that it's for the Ola of my wife. And the answer is again, Amar Abba Bo, Shem Olas Ishi. He doesn't just say that he's bringing it as an Ola of a Yeledes, he says for an Ola of my wife. But the question is, Peter, in that case, then obviously, if he has a wife, then obviously, and he says, the shame olas ishi, there's a very big concern that maybe in fact his wife gave birth, and he's willing for that. And the answer is ma'od etema. You would have said im isid yolda, if she in fact gave birth, chola havalei, there would be a koil about it. People would know that his wife gave birth. So if they know that his wife didn't give birth, then it will be obvious that he's lying. Hamash malon. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar is telling us imra apuli apil. The fact is, she might have miscarried, and people are not going to know about that. There's no koil about that, and therefore they're going to think that in fact he is bringing an oila for his wife. But we're saying the fact is it's not brought the neder and the dava. So therefore, even if he says the shem olas ishi, we're saying that if he has no wife, then there's no concern. If he has a wife, then there is this concern that maybe in fact he's bringing it that maybe in fact he's bringing it because of miscarriage of hers. Now here's where Rashi points out that there's a problem with the gusa as we have in front of us. Because, first of all, the Gemara is going to say that the Gemara didn't say ma'u detema that you would have thought that Rashi says we didn't say ma'u detema you would have thought. Why all of a sudden is the Gemara bringing over here this ma'u detema? So, uh, And also, if he doesn't have a wife, then why would the mitzvah even need to bring that? Of course, there's nothing to be choshed for. So therefore, Rashi prefers a gusa that says that what we're saying is it comes to include an oilas yeledes, and here's where the Ma'u Tema comes in. Yeah. We don't have Rabbi Bohu's and Rabbi Loz's statement about where he says the same oilas ishti or anything like that, says Rashi, the gusa that he prefers. We're just going straight through. You would have thought when he says oilas yeledes, you would have thought that maybe his wife gave birth in the point, and the answer is that no, if she gave birth, there would be a koil. So completely different gusa than we have it over here. So in the gusa that we have it over here, again, the Gemara is saying that that if he has no wife, that would be the Mishnah saying it's no problem. But if he has a wife, then conceivably there's a concern that maybe in fact people might think that she miscarried and he's bringing a korban because of that, and therefore we also go into Rashi's preferred gusa. Rather, we're saying never mind all of that. We're just saying that the Mishnah is saying if he says l'shem olas yeledes, the Mishnah is implying that if he says l'shem olas yeledes, it would be kosher, because if in fact she did give birth, there would be a coil, and since there's no coil, then people are going to realize that he's talking nonsense. Now Tosfos points out that when we say he doesn't have a wife, they mean we don't know whether he has a wife who's new to town, and we don't know whether he's married or not. And the same thing with Ein Lo Zevach before would mean not necessarily that we know for a fact he has no korban, but we didn't know whether he has a korban over here. Where he doesn't know, you're right, says Tosfos. If we know for sure that he has no wife, then there's no chiddush in it, but we're talking about over here. We don't know one way or the other. And therefore, Tosfos says we can still preserve that gusa that the Gemara is making that distinction whether he has a wife or not.